MPB is the largest global platform to buy, sell and trade used photo and video kit. MPB is the simple, safe and circular way to trade, upgrade and get paid for kit. Find out more at www.mpb.com.
Hello and welcome to the New Look AV Forums podcast for Monday the 13th of February. I'm Phil Hinton. Joining me tonight are forum regulars and podcast regulars Ed Selly, Ian Collin, Julian Scott and Martin Jew. Good evening, guys.
Hello.
Hello, Phil.
Right, so this is what we're going to call the main podcast, the AV Forums podcast. This is where we cover hardware for home cinema, hi-fi, TVs, calibration, all that kind of jazz. We're going to cover everything in this podcast. We're aiming to be 90 minutes long, and we're going to split the podcast into different sections as we go through. So there'll be a TV section, a home AV, home cinema section, and of course, hi-fi. So that's the plan tonight. So this podcast will stick to its regular time of 7 p.m. every second and fourth Mondays of the month. The movies podcast is moving to its own slot on its own Monday evening. You probably saw it last week. It will be starting at 8:30 in an evening, presented by Kaz, as always. And the movies team will take you through 4K discs and all the big releases at the cinema. So they should have a podcast every week moving forward now from AV Forums. It'll either be the movies edition or the main AV Forums podcast, where we talk about all the kit that we love to review, that we love to sit and watch our movies on and so on. So this is the main event for all of that. We're also going to do video interviews. We're going to bring the industry in as well. It's something that we've wanted to do for some time now. We'll let you know a little bit more about who our guest is on the next podcast. And if you want to send any questions for them, we'll let you know the deadline for those and we'll try and get them answered as well. The chat window is open if you're watching us live. And I know some of you do join us live and it is appreciated. So the chat window is open. If you've got any questions, get them in there and we shall find some time tonight to try and answer as many as we can. The vast majority of you listen to the podcast through a podcast provider or iTunes and so on, Spotify and other suppliers. If you listen a little bit later on, but you still want to ask questions, you can do that one or two ways. You can send us an email to podcast@avforums.com or go into AV Forums, into the main forum list, head down to the bottom and you'll find the AV Forums podcast forum in there. Just go to this episode in that forum and add your question to the thread. That's probably the best way for it to be noticed. And we'll certainly come back and answer those questions or any comments that you have. So our last podcast, we discussed Netflix and their proposal to basically make sure that you've got your own account and you're not sharing a password. So there was some comments for that. And I've forgotten who I've given this to. So I'm going to write it down next time. So who volunteered for this one?
I was volunteered. I wouldn't say was volunteered on my behalf. So yeah, we've got a couple of interesting comments on this just to flag up. For the first one, Lloydie92 said that they'd like the pricing strategy adjusted so that 4K is available further down the pricing tiers rather than being basically your second choice. They say that they don't need four concurrent devices either, as two is plenty. So presumably they'd just be happy with a simpler pricing strategy. Second interesting comment was from Mr. H, who doesn't think that paid for account sharing will encourage piracy, but does think that folks will become more fastidious over what they want to watch and how long they keep a streaming service before cancelling and resubscribing in 6 months' time, which is something that obviously people do. They'll cancel or resubscribe when there's something they want to watch. So it maybe might encourage, or Mr. H thinks it might encourage people to drop out and drop in a little bit more.
Okay, excellent. What do you guys think? Now the dust settled a little bit. I think there's been a little bit of backpedaling.
There's been a fair amount of backpedaling. It's something that's interesting was the idea. Different people need different things from subscriptions. There's maybe something that Netflix wanted to look at and consider is that the idea of a subscription builder, actually a configurator, that's quite a good idea. So you just want one 4K sub just on one television. You end up paying less than someone who perhaps wants four devices but doesn't necessarily want all the bells and whistles. That could actually potentially generate more loyalty than the sort of one-size-fits-all policy. But I dare say it's more complicated to set up and it's going to require more dynamic pricing. But yes, there has been a fair degree of rollback, and it's like, whoa, we didn't mean this quite much. And they were trialing things in Canada, and just lots of people quit their subscriptions in protest. Yeah. So I think there's going to have to be a bit more tweaking for the system as yet.
Yeah, I think there's other ways to encourage them, guys, to become account holders or new tiers, like you say, Ed. I think that's the solution. Anybody else got any thoughts on this before we move on? Jules?
I've not kept up with I've heard that there've been some rowing back on this from Netflix, that something was leaked. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't ready for it, which sounds like we were just testing the water.
Yeah.
And they didn't like the reaction. So maybe it'll pull back, but it affects our household. You know, my daughter lives in Norwich. So she would have to probably buy her own account, wouldn't she? I don't know.
It is a tough one for them. I think the prospect of losing more subscribers is not a good thing. So I'm sure this is a subject we're going to come back on. But thank you very much to those of you who made your comments in the thread under this podcast. The other subject was 8K. Is 8K dead? No, 8K is not dead. That's not what we were saying. But it's certainly been delayed, and it's certainly not going to be as big and flashy a push as 4K has been. Mm-hmm. So there's a few comments there, Jules.
Yeah.
You need to pick up on a couple of those.
Yeah. Rooster thinks 8K is dead in the water and is just a marketing tool since there is not enough content.
Lack Captain of content's Ron, a big thing.
Well, when 4K was launched, there was no 4K either. Remember Sony pushing 4K panels before there was anything available. Captain Ron agrees it just feels the more is better aspect of human nature without making any appreciable difference. And sort of connected to that, there's also comments Nuri 58 says that there's a limit to what the eye can see in terms of resolution on moving images, topping out well before 8K comes. And he also notes the high energy costs, and that taps into the EU and what they've been conjecturing. I think the 8K Association say that basically the energy limits that the EU are planning to impose are so low that no 8K TV or micro LED TV, for that matter, could actually pass. Mm-hmm. Along similar lines, THX 1138 UK says that it's pointless for TVs, but makes sense for specialist monitors, large space or training simulators. And says the latest gen games consoles can't realistically render 8K in real time anywhere except for their title. I think a lot of that is, makes sense. When I go into people's rooms, there's a practical limit to how close people can sit to the TVs. Mm-hmm. In any case, most people are not sitting close enough when I go into their rooms to calibrate to actually even see 4K resolution.
Yeah.
So for most people, especially in the UK, we've got limits on the sizes of TVs we can put in rooms, unlike American basements or whatever. Most people are not going to see it. They're going to struggle to get any benefit from 8K from that point. And we also see, DVD is still outselling Blu-ray and UHD Blu-ray. What market penetration? I mean, there's not going to be any 8K physical disc. So it'll all be down to streaming. And are streaming platforms in the position to deliver 8K at all? When I'm going to grading studios, most people are still using grading at SDR, including the studio I was in today. So I think it's an awful long way down the road, to be honest. Maybe not dead, but it's going to be limited initially, and it'll be quite a few years.
Yeah, and that was a big thing at CES. It was the lack of push for 8K.
Yeah.
I think manufacturers, let's get 4K right. And and it's very true what you're saying as well about DVD outselling the higher resolution formats. That is very true. And of course, I can come in on an evening and my other half's got the TV on. And I don't know how she does it, but she always manages to have the SD channels. Mm-hmm. Even though I've shown her favorites, go to favorites, everything's HD. She still has BBC One in SD. And then when I say this is
she's
in SD,
absolutely 100% doing it to wind you up. And I endorse that wholeheartedly.
I can't see any difference. So Yeah, it's the everybody that made a comment. All of your comments are very much hitting the nail on the head. There are a number of reasons why 8K is going to take some time to come to market. And it was interesting that Toon Army was over in Tokyo and had a 8K demo and found it underwhelming and dim. Well, it's like I said in the last podcast, you know, if it's an LED LCD TV, you need much more light behind that LCD panel to get the same brightness as a 4K panel.
Yeah.
So the 8K panels will be dimmer. It's just physics at the end of the day. So thank you very much for everybody.
But also, if I could just step in there as well, they also say that you need a 14-foot wide screen in a medium-sized room to be able to detect all the detail in a 4K image. So actually there was a move to get digital renderers away from their monitors and to go and look at their work on large screens at the studios. Also a 35 millimeter negative film, if you were to break it up into pixels, it would represent about 3500 pixels in the horizontal plane. And as we know, we can put those images onto massive 40-foot plus screens and get a fantastic image. So I think it is kind of academic if we're moving into the 8K sphere. I think particularly on monitors up to 65 inches, it really is an academic
Yeah, absolutely. To go to 8K. Absolutely. And Hollywood ain't going there anytime soon.
Yeah.
It's rare to get a 4K DI. These days, if it's an effects laden movie, you ain't getting a 4K DI because the render time just for the effects at 4K it costs the studios too much. So yeah, it's going to take a long time before certainly Hollywood moves over there. But you know, is Hollywood going to delay it? Because there are other streams of content that people watch nowadays. YouTube already, you know, you can already watch stuff in 8K on YouTube, and lots of people now watch YouTube that are not film fans. So you know, there are other markets. Right, we need to move on, but thank you very much for everybody who answered the call for your questions. Do that, send your questions, send your comments and your opinions. The best way to do that is the AV Forums forum. Go and find this podcast and add your stuff in there to the thread. Right, moving on. Tonight we're talking about my trip to Amsterdam. No, not that trip, the one to Philips. We're talking about that TV and sound event. It's always held at the Hilton Hotel in Schiphol Airport. So basically you fly into Schiphol, you go to the hotel in the airport, and then you go back and get on a flight and fly home again. It's really, really easy. It's one of the easiest events to get to. Once you're through immigration, that is, through the Brexit queue. But once you get through that, it's nice and easy, and it's always a great event. So I had a great time there. So all the new products, we'll tell you about that. Jules has been to Barcelona.
I have, indeed.
But Jules has been to ISE, so we're going to go through what Jules saw there and so on. We'll do that a little bit later on. We also got some reviews tonight, so we're looking at the NAD 3050LE integrated amp. And unusually for Ed, he's also looking at a multi-channel speaker setup, which he reviewed at Christmas. He's going to tell us all about that. Just in case you missed the review, I do appreciate Christmas and New Year's very, very busy, and then we've got CES and everything else. So sometimes these reviews do disappear off the front page. So we just want to remind you what we have done, just so you can find those things. Martin's going to take a look at the System Audio Air 9 speakers and SVS Prime speakers. So we'll catch up with Martin and discuss those. Plus, Ian's got all the latest news, TV, hi-fi, home cinema, everything, even balloons that go floating. Ian will tell you all about that, and we'll be answering your questions in the chat. So if you are watching us live, do get your questions in there. And I'm just going to quickly go and have a look and see what that is. Magnus, thank you very much for your comment tonight, Magnus. Philips 77 with MLA. Yes, 55, 65 and 77 has MLA. And they are Meta screens as well. I had that confirmed this week from Danny Tack. So there you go, Magnus, your answer to your question. If you've got any more questions, get them in tonight. We will try and answer them. But before we get started with the show, very quickly, guys, what have we all been up to since the last podcast? Ed, what have you been up to?
I went to a gig on Saturday night.
Excellent.
Decisions on doing more live music this year. This time round, I went to the, as I say, a band, an act I've talked about before because I have a fabulous name, Warrington Runcorn Newtown Development Plan, with supporting acts as well. It was quite intense. It's sort of heavy electronica, big noises. I mean, it must be said, things became less weird across the evenings. The support acts went sort of, Polypause was the first act, and that was quite odd. Then Field Lines Cartographer, and that was a bit less odd. And by the time you got to the main event, there was actual music involved, so that was good. It was entertaining, and it, you know, very reasonably priced, £8.50, easy to get to in Bedford. It was a lot of fun, and I'm not going to say who I'm off to see next, but it's a right blast from the past. I think Phil's going to be quite keen on that one. So yeah, that was good. It's just always. I have to balance going to see live music that leaves me deaf and unable to review things, but with the experience of hearing things in a different environment. And I think that's a priceless thing to be able to do. And I really, really enjoyed it. So go out and support your local venues.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's one of these subjects. We'll probably come back to it and discuss it in another podcast, but the price of tickets, you know, we've looked at some gigs that we wanted to go to this year, and the price of tickets is just extortionate.
Well, I'm paying £90 to see Peter Gabriel, but £8.50 for this, I thought was pretty reasonable. It was good to see some acts that are a bit different to normal.
Yep, excellent. Jules, what have you been up to apart from ISE? Because we're coming back to that.
Yep, apart from Barcelona. It was my birthday on Saturday, so...
happy birthday.
Yeah,
happy
thank birthday. You. It started off really well. So playing football, 1-0 down at halftime, manager brings me off. I scored the equaliser and set up the winner. So a goal and assist on my birthday. That was very nice. And then Norwich had to ruin it later, of course. Ian knows all about this. Yep. But the morning was good, so.
Okay, excellent. Ian, what football games have you been playing? And happy birthday again, Jules.
Cheers.
Not so much football games. Weirdly, despite being a big gamer and being a big fan of football, I don't really play a lot of FIFA, which is strange.
Okay.
But no, I haven't been doing that much gaming of late. I did upgrade my broadband, which was about exciting as it gets. and I have actually been making a bit of an effort to get out of the house as well. Because all during the winter, I kind of make an excuse that it's too cold and it's too dark and it might rain, so I never go out and do anything. So I've put the controller down a little bit, not gone overboard because some new Power Wash Simulator DLC just dropped, so I can't commit.
You've not moved on the carpet cleaner simulator.
No, some Lara Croft DLC for Power Wash Simulators in the house, so that's on the to-do list very much. but yes, I've been going out walking, been down to the beach a few times, so it's just nice to get some actual fresh air into the lungs as well.
Yeah, I mean, you should be really taking advantage of the where you are. You're very lucky what you have, beach and everything, where you are.
Yeah, it's the kind of thing that I'd regret it. As soon as I moved away, I'd be, why can't I walk down to the beach? But whilst I'm here, then I never make use of it.
Yeah, it's always the same, isn't it? Martin, what have you been up to?
Well, since Christmas, moving house, actually, and I think most of it's done now. Luckily, my move was within Henley on Thames, so quite an easy one, only a couple of miles to drive from point A to B. But it's still the big, overhaul to one's life, if you like.
Yeah, but it's never easy moving.
It's never easy, yeah. And, you know, you lose things. It's so annoying. But one of the upsides of this is I've got a space downstairs in this new place where I'm setting up a home cinema, but it is a rented flat, so I'm not going to do anything intrusive to the walls and ceiling. I'm not even going to ask, but I'm setting up my M&K system with 6 ceiling-bound channels for Dolby Atmos, so it'll be a 7.2.6 system. I've got a local carpenter building me a steel frame from which to hang those. That steel frame will also carry my CinemaScope screen, and one of the crossbars will hold my Epson projector as well. So that will become my reference environment. It will be my studio and an entertainment area. And it's kind of going to be an interesting experiment. And I will share some pictures, I think, when it's done.
Well, I think you should be videoing the whole thing and just giving us an insight into what you're doing. So get crack the iPhone out, get making some videos. That'll be
I'm afraid I've only got an Android phone, but yeah, I'll take some moving pictures. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. I've been doing something similar-ish these past few weeks. So my flat is getting renovated at the minute. So the cinema room has been out of action since about November. Because everything that was in the cinema, in the flat, was in the cinema room. Well, the rest of the flat was plastered and painted and all the rest of it. So that's all done now. So I had to get the cinema room up and running this week. So everything's been taken out of the cinema room. And I've been busy painting in there. I thought it was going to be a two-day job. My stepdad came down from Scotland to give me a hand, and we thought it'd be easy to prep the room and all the rest of it. Now, I've gone away from the dark colour on the wall, basically because it's a media room. It's going to be used for filming and so on while the flat is still around. And once it's sold, I will be moving to another place. It just hasn't been built yet. And we're going to be moving to a new build and going to be going into a garage at a new build. So it's going to be slightly smaller than the current room. But while I'm still there, we will be using it. So it's taken me 5 days to get it round. And thanks to people on the forums, I was looking for a colour that I could use that was not going to impact on picture quality and so on, still give a good image, cut down on reflections and so on. So I actually went into the DIY forums and had a look to see what people are doing in their cinema rooms in the forums. It's always a great resource for that kind of thing. And happened upon Dulux Thunderclouds, it's called. And it's a neutral grey, as you can see from the photographs. So it should be black when you turn the lights out, once the window's closed and the curtains are closed and so on. Get light out of there. It should darken up quite nicely. But again, for filming, it's not going to completely and utterly kill any light source that I have in there, which when you're filming stuff, you don't want to lose your light source. Otherwise, you see nothing. So again, it should be all right to be bouncing some light to get film products and that kind of thing. So yeah, it's been a bit of a trial to get to where we are, but hopefully by the next podcast, I should be podcasting from that room.
Well, that's right. And every room is completely different, Phil, isn't it?
Yeah,
and this is the thing, we've always got to adapt to our situation. For example, at the moment in my room, it's beautiful oak floors in this flat on both levels, and it's kind of open plan. And where my home cinema is going, I asked the landlady if I could put a fitted carpet in there. She said no, understandably, but she said you can put a rug. So I got a carpet company to come in and fit a rug, so it looks like a fitted carpet.
Right.
And it's been whipped at the edge, and it's just great. It just looks like a fitted carpet room. So you know, there are these things, there are these problems you can get round. I think
does it really
I'm saying.
Tie the room together though?
Yes.
Good.
Yes. Yeah.
You have room for all your shoes. Your trainer collection.
Well, yeah. Yes.
Yeah. 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 I'll try and keep everybody updated how we're getting on with that room, because that will be the room that'll be used certainly until the flat gets moved on. It's been fun getting back to that room, because that I've been in that property for about 23 years. I know that room inside out. I know every
Were you sad, Phil?
I will be when I get rid of it. Yeah, when it finally moves on, it'll be the end of having a big cinema room, I think, like that. But I think a lot of people are in that position at the minute. Uh-huh. I think, you know, the days of dedicated rooms and so on. But again, this is a conversation we can come back to. But yeah, it's going to be interesting. We'll keep it. We'll keep the information coming. And obviously Martin's build as well. That sounds really interesting, Martin, what you're doing there. I hadn't thought about doing it like that, but that's really interesting for a rented property. And a lot of people, again, will be in the same kind of position.
Yeah, exactly.
Something like that. So, yeah, absolutely. Looks like great stuff. Right. Before we get on with the show, we are going to competitions. And I think Ed was volunteered for this one.
I was. I'm just now scrolling down to the right page. It's quite brief. You can win a Denon Home Range 350 wireless speaker worth £599, courtesy of Peter Tyson. This closes at midnight tonight, so you need to be listening in the near field for this one. Do so, though. It's a very, very good product. I've tested one of these. I really enjoyed it. And you can also win a Sony ZV-1 camera worth £519 from MPB. Head on over to abforums.com/competitions to enter, and anyone except Phil can do so, provided you are a member of avforums.com.
Yeah, Good stuff. Get entered in those competitions. And of course, if you're a movie fan, there's plenty of movies, discs, 4K discs, that kind of thing. Loads of those competitions at the minute as well. So if that tickles your fancy, get into competitions as well. Right. New patrons, welcome along to Hudson 10. Thank you very much for your support, Hudson. That really is appreciated. Everybody that supports us is doing a great job because it helps us provide you with better content at the end of the day. And one of these days, we might even make a decent podcast. So please keep the contributions coming in. It really is appreciated. Right, let's get on with the show. Okay, so like I say, we're going to split things into different sections just so we can keep the conversation in the relevant spot. We're going to get everybody involved in these kinds of things. But the first one is TVs and quite a bit of TV news at this moment in time because all the manufacturers are telling us what's coming up this year. We have another event happening next week that I can't tell you about. It's under NDA, it will be able to tell you by the next podcast. I think it might actually be March until we can tell you what's what. But everybody's coming up with their models now. If it wasn't announced at CES, they're certainly announcing them now. And last week I was in Amsterdam for the Philips event. Like I say, it was held in the Hilton Hotel at Schiphol Airport. It's a regular thing until COVID hit, obviously. And it's one of those events that happens over 2 days. You fly in day one. There is a press conference to tell you about what the models are coming up in terms of TV and sound. And then they take us all out for dinner. It's a European-wide thing. So Philips provide the transport and the accommodation, obviously, at the Hilton, and bring journalists all over Europe to the event. The dinner, it's not a sit-down dinner. It never has been a sit-down dinner event. It's always something a little bit different. And this year it was in a circus tent with lots of little eatery places, lots of drink, lots of partying, lots of loud music and flashing lights and confetti and everything else. It was an excellent night. And then the following day, with a bad head, you have to sit through 5 workshops explaining all the technology. So they get the right way around, get the drink in first and then sit everybody down in these little lectures about the products. But it's great fun. It's always great fun. And there's some big products this year and some big products missing this year or certainly not on the radar this year. So the first thing is there's no QD OLED. Danny is looking at prototypes. He said that in the interview that we did with him just before Christmas. They do have the prototypes in. They are looking at it. This is something that I will ask him a little bit more about. We are going to interview Danny. He's going to be on the next AV Forums podcast, so the 27th of this month. For that, if you've got any questions that you want to ask, having gone through the news stories that's on the forums, gone through the threads and so on, we've confirmed that a number of things like MLA will be and Meta will be on the 77-inch 908. So if you've got any questions like that, then get your questions in and we'll certainly put them to Danny. Now, we're interviewing him on Thursday, so you're going to have to be quick. You have to get your questions in by Wednesday evening of this week. So that's Wednesday the 15th. So get your questions in. And if they come in time, we will certainly ask them and get Danny to answer them. But like I say, 2 models have been announced. So the OLED 808 and the OLED Plus 908, both these Ambilight TVs. Obviously, OLED 808 is it's a second tier TV. It's more wider market. The 908, the OLED Plus 908, is the one with the Bowers & Wilkins sound system. This time it's incorporated the same as the last year's 907. I reviewed that on the forums. Go and have a look at the 907. It's a nice chassis. It's all encompassed in the same chassis. It doesn't have a separate soundbar or anything like that. It's a LCR system, so left, center, right. It has the new P5 processor, which is in the 7th generation. But it's a single chip, and this is where a lot of the confusion has come in. So Philips normally do a single chip and a dual chip P5 processor. This is a whole new processor that's in this product line for 2023, which basically means that it is using the MediaTek Pentium 1000 chip. It has two HDMI 2.1 ports, full 48 gigabits per second, three-sided Ambilight, but because it's the single chip, we won't get the OLED Plus 938, which would replace the 937 from last year. That's going to be a 2024 model, but it should be able to do 4K 120 at full resolution, and everything that was a slight issue last time around has been ironed out with this new chip. So that's the 908. The 808, slightly different, slightly lower panel, so it doesn't have the latest panel that's in the 908. So it's last year's panel. It's OLED EX, and it has all the functionality and features that you would expect from that level of product. It replaces the 807. The other thing with the 908, like I say, it has the new panel. So that's the new Meta panel. So it has micro lens array. So basically what that does is, because you, within any display you lose light internally in the display, the micro lens array does away with that. Any light that's bouncing around on the inside of the panel is directed back out towards the viewer, which means that you get more brightness from this panel. They are quoting 2,100 nits on a 3% window, and that's in the vivid mode, which they now call crystal clear. So it's not in an accurate mode. I would expect accurate mode D65 white point calibrated should be about 1,300 nits, if those figures are to be believed. So it's definitely a step up in brightness, the same as what Panasonic are promising and the same as what LG are promising, because it's the same panels. So they do have the heatsink technology. Philips have their own processing on board, which is obviously the single chip P5. So it looks like a really exciting TV. They are announcing it now. Normally you wouldn't announce the OLED Plus models until September. Obviously they're bringing that forward. I don't think there's going to be any September launches from the company this year. They only have the two main OLED models. There was also LED, mini LED and LED TVs. Ian, maybe you can take us through the models there in terms of what Philips announced with mini LED and LED.
Yeah, sure. There was a couple of mini LED TVs, or mini LED, sorry. The new 9308's obviously the bigger deal in the mini LED department, penciled in for a Q3 window, I believe. It basically launches a new lineup to be called the Extra, which is billed as offering kind of a middle ground between what the OLEDs can deliver and what the standard LED ranges will deliver. It's got the same P5 processing chip as the OLEDs. The 9308 comes in 55, 65 inch sizes, offering up to 1,000 its output. And the 9308 also gets a Bowers & Wilkins sound system with a 2.1 channel system built in. As you'd expect, the 9008 is going to be a slightly scaled down version. They didn't give a great deal of details on it. From what I could see, you might have got more from the event itself. But it does come with a 77 inch option in place for the 9008. So if you want a bigger screen, that could be one to consider. Yeah. As for the LEDs, this is building on the existing the One range. These with the 8808 and the 8508 penciled in for, I think these are penciled in for Q2 of this year, so not too far away. 8808 comes in, starts at 43 inches, going up to 85, the 8508 topping out at 65 inches. And again, the 8808 is going to be like the bigger deal out of the two for the LEDs, coming with a full 4K 120 hertz Dolby Vision package, with the 8508 coming in a little bit below that, maybe at 60 hertz. But again, you're going to have the new P5 processor, three-sided Ambilight system, so it'll be interesting to see how those models, and especially the contrasting pricing, shapes up.
Yeah. And it's interesting, the marketing behind this. So you had the One. The One's been the best-selling TV for Philips. As you can imagine, it's the one that does everything for, you know, the wider consumer out there. Obviously, the higher-end TVs, they've got that last with the OLED 808 and 908, OLED Plus 908. So there was this gap in the middle, which is the Extra TV. So it doesn't quite have all the high-end features, but also it's that little step up from the One. And again, they're looking for a bit of a wider audience, a wider consumer audience looking at that TV. So it'd be interesting to see the numbers, sales numbers, because obviously you're then moving that up to mini LED as well in those models. One thing I did forget before we move on, is that the OLED 808 will be available in a 42 and 48 inch screen size. It's the first 42 that Philips have done. So you want any more information on that, then the news stories that Ian put together are up there. Like I say, we are going to interview Danny Tack this coming Thursday. That interview will go out in the next TV Forums podcast on the 27th. So if you've got any questions on the new range of TVs, or you want to know a little bit more about the Pentonic chip that's in there, the P5 processor, why there's no QLED, QD OLED this year. Did I say QLED? Sorry, QD OLED. Why there's none of that this year. Get your questions in, because we'll certainly be asking those to Danny. And like I say, 27th of Feb, we'll have that interview. Right. So we'll move on to some news that's not Philips related, Ian. And it's, again, the Pentonic 1000 chip. There seems to have been a bit of a kerfuffle online, because some journalists just assumed that there'd be four HDMI 2.1 inputs on this chip.
Yes, yeah, and in their defence, when the product was first announced on the MediaTek website under HDMI 2.1 ports, it did say there'd be four of them, but that's now been corrected just as an unspecified number. Because, yeah, I mean, the assumption was, based on those listings, that the four HDMI ports would be HDMI 2.1, but it seems that it has been slightly exaggerated. I think some of the confusion might have come down from the fact that, because in order to receive HDMI 2.1 certification, you only actually need to deliver one of the many features that HDMI 2.1 delivers, which includes dynamic HDR, eARC, variable refresh rates, auto low latency mode, all those kind of bells and whistles that come with it. So, I mean, I don't know the specifics of what these ports will deliver, but obviously the big one that a lot of people will be after is the 48 gigabytes per second bandwidth, which helps facilitate things like 4K 120 hertz, which is going to be a big deal for gamers. And many other people. But it turns out that, or the assumption is now, that the Pentonic 1000 chip, of those four HDMI 2.1 ports, only two of those will support 48 gigabytes per second, which is obviously going to make a big deal to those people that were expecting four full-fat HDMI 2.1 ports. Which does, I mean, it's not exactly a loophole in the system, because as far as I'm aware, the certification process has been around for a while. But I think part of the factor is that HDMI 2.0 certification has been pushed aside. So there might be a chance that one or two manufacturers might push the luck a little bit by pushing what would have previously been billed as HDMI 2.0 ports as HDMI 2.1. So you just need to check the small print to make sure what you're getting.
Check the reviews, because we measure each of these ports. We'll tell you exactly what they are on the TVs. But yes, there was a bit of confusion. The rules were changed. I think HDMI.org need to kind of look at themselves a little bit in terms of what it is that they are now suggesting. So what they're suggesting is that if a manufacturer has, I don't know, one HDMI 2.1 port of 48 gigabits per second, and the other three are not, that are just HDMI 2.0, they can say that it's full bandwidth. They could have four HDMI 2.0s with EARC activated, which can be done on 2.1 ports, but call them 2.0 ports, but call them 2.1 ports. And you could have a consumer buying a TV thinking they are getting something that they're not getting, which is a bit naughty from the standards compliance side of things. They've changed these rules. But again, MediaTek, they take some of the blame here. They put out a document online that said you would get four HDMI 2.1 ports with the Pentonic 1000 chip, and that is not the case. It's two ports. Now, do you need four ports? I doubt anybody other than serious gamers who have more than two HDMI 2.1 devices would need four. But, of course, the argument is that Samsung and LG have been offering four 48 gigabits per second HDMI 2.1 ports since, well, at least the last 4 years. Their models have carried four. Obviously, they do their own silicon in-house. They don't use a company like MediaTek, so they can offer that. It has caused a lot of problems, but I think, is it a PR disaster? I think what it highlights is that we need better standards. We need a company that's not just a commercial company who are handling the standards and saying what manufacturers can say and not say. It seems to be that standards are pretty lame, in my opinion. If you were asking me, it needs to be a bit tougher, a bit tighter. It's why we used to have things like THX certified or ISF certified attached to products and so on. You knew you were getting a certain level of performance. I think that's been really watered down, and you know, changing what classifies a port as an HDMI 2.1 port is, well, it's a bit of a fallacy now, if you ask me. Jules, you got any thoughts on this?
Yeah, it's not cricket, is it, Phil?
No, it's not. my opinion, it's not.
Yeah. And it's somewhat disappointing, especially, you know, the first indications, as we just heard, you know, whether we're going to have four ports capable. And it now obviously is down to two. And, you know, most of the places I go into, guys have got a PS5 or an Xbox. Sometimes you come across, quite often actually, you know, people with both. And then the very occasionally somebody will have a gaming PC in there as well. And yeah, they'll be, I guess that's going to throw the spotlight back to LG and to Samsung, as you've highlighted. So it's a missed opportunity, I think, and also disappointing because it raised hopes, which have just been dashed.
It has. Yeah. I mean, what you can't do is you can't blame the journalists who reported on this, because they were handed a press release from a company that specified what the specification would be for this chip, and they've just reported on that. So I think there was a bit of a backlash, which I was a little bit unfair, I think. You know, it should be the company that's holding their hands up here, having misled the market in terms of what was on this chip. But let's not have a complete downer, because there are some interesting things on the new Pentonic chip. You know, it supports all the latest Wi-Fi, so 6 and 6E. It has frame interpolation technology on there, Dolby Vision IQ with precision detail. You got Dolby Atmos, you got DTS, Master HD, Virtual X Audio, intelligent view technology, so you can have 8 different streams onto a display, and each of those separate. So it's not like a picture-in-picture, it's actually separate streams, which is really, really powerful for some users, and that will be used certainly in the professional sphere. You have more powerful AI processing in there, and the list goes on. And obviously the interesting thing for our audience out there is calm and ready. So, you know, TV manufacturers don't need to go to portrait display now and spend a ton of money and years in terms of developing their TV sets to be able to do the AutoCal with Kalman and all the rest of it. It's built into the chips now. So any manufacturer can offer that to the end user. So there's a lot of great things on this chip. It's just the little bit of negativity seems to have blown into a big story. And I think it's just, and quite rightly, the standards being changed, that's naughty. That really is naughty. It never happened. And then, you know, the company giving out false information and how many ports there would be, again, hasn't done them any favours, I don't think. So if you've got any points, any opinions on this, or any questions, get them in. We're live tonight, or if you're listening a little bit later on, head to AV Forum's podcast forum and put your thoughts, opinions, or your questions in the thread, and we'll come back and answer those a little bit later. So that's the news out of the way. And I think we've covered everything for the TV section, so we're going to move on swiftly to home cinema.
If you'd like to support the AV Forums podcast on a regular basis, then why not become a patron? Head over to patreon.com/AVForums to sign up. You can also make a one-off donation through the Super Chat or via streamlabs.com/AVForums. All donations help us to improve the website and the podcasts. Thank you to all our supporters.
So welcome to the home cinema section. What happens in here, I wonder? Maybe talk about some home cinema and home AV products. So first of all, why don't we find out what's happening in the world of AV and head over to Ian. So Ian, home cinema subjects, what do we have in terms of product news?
First up, we have Sony announcing no fewer than 5 new 8K AVRs on the way, featuring spatial sound mapping along with the likes of 360 reality audio, Dolby Vision, and a whole bunch more stuff. The lineup includes four new additions to its ES series or elevated standard models, which are led by the STR AZ7000 ES, which comes with a 13-point two-channel 150-watt solution and then scales down through an 11.2, 9.2, and 7.2 options. They're all models kind of geared towards the custom installation market with support for the likes of Control 4, Crestron Savant, and OVRC, with prices at the top starting from $3,299 down to $1,099. The fifth model, which isn't in the ES series, is the STR AN1000. It's a rather more conventional 7.2 home cinema AVR AV receiver, which comes with a cheaper $899 price point. And the reason why I'm quoting US dollars is the only downside is that they've only been confirmed for the US and Canadian market so far, but fingers crossed they'll make it over the side of the pond some point in the not too distant future.
Hopefully. There might be something coming up in the next week or so, but I can't say anything at the minute. Right, let's move on. Macintosh, AVR. This is something a little bit different from the company.
Yeah, its ever-expanding lineup is now getting the a home theatre receiver in the form of the MHT300. It's due to start shipping in March with a price tag of £8,995. It's a 7.2 channel model offering up to 150 watts at 4 ohms or 120 watts into 8 ohms. It comes with 8K and 4K support, plus the likes of Dolby Atmos, DTSX, Dolby Vision, HDR10, and 3D video pass through. Also comes with direct live room correction. It's got 7 32-bit DACs and a bunch of other features, which we include more on the website if you want to find out more. And yeah, I don't know if you guys have had a chance to take a look at it as well, because you might know more than I do.
There was some heroic, like all the bells, some ever so slightly heroic missing the point in some of the comments on the news story. Macintosh has no interest whatsoever in being at the bleeding edge of specification here. They have no interest in packing more channels of amplification in other people or doing new and novel things. This is designed to go into households where they've probably had some Macintosh stereo equipment or at least are fully aware of the brand. And the whole idea is it goes in, it operates like a Macintosh should, it looks fab whilst it does it, and it probably will last forever, or it will still be going well beyond the point where all of the technology in it is utterly obsolete. Mm-hmm. And I have every confidence that it will do all of those things exceptionally well. I mean, obviously, as you know, as Ian says, you can add extra channels to it, and who knows, maybe 1 or 2% of them may see those extra channels. I would be willing to bet at least a pint that the vast majority of them never see more than 5 speakers or 5.2 for front height, and that's it. They won't have anything else attached. They will work seamlessly, it will work flawlessly, it will behave impeccably whilst it does it, and it will be built like a lorry. And do you know what, if I was going to put together a pleasant home cinema for my own use, it's the sort of thing I'd covet instantly, because it's great.
Okay.
Even the looks, Ed.
Yeah, well, you see, Martin, I've grown on the looks, because I've reviewed a couple of their stereo products now. It all looks mad, but they are genuinely joyous things to operate. Everything makes much more sense after you've spent time with them. I'm actually worried that this one doesn't have anything like enough knobs on the front of it. But
more views.
Well, yeah, no. Well, I mean, all of these are concerns, but I am confident that it will look and behave like a Macintosh. And I am much more of an advocate of that, having tested some of their stuff, than I ever thought I would be. I always thought it was massively over the top. Having lived with some of the stuff on review, I'm actually something of a convert now. It makes a lot of sense.
That's okay. Very interesting, because I've never got my hands on any of the stuff, only seen it and obviously been to demos. My impression of it, though, or my perception of it, is that it's stuff that ends up in upper middle class large living rooms in the United States and pretty much nowhere else.
Well, I mean, they've made some decent inroads into Europe now. They actually have decent distribution. I do agree, it's a heavily US-centric brand. I mean, so the power amplifiers are designed for room and speaker challenges that simply do not exist in most UK situations. But no, I'm going to defend this one. I think that this is basically what the company needs. It's going to do lovely work with Sonos, Faber, surround systems, which again, don't go big on extended surround. It's going to look sumptuous. It's going to last forever and it's going to be a joy to use. And that's my hunch on this one.
If any Hollywood film has in the script a hi-fi system of any description, you can bet that the art direction and the set designer go straight for Macintosh gear, because just the way it looks.
Unless they're the villain, where inexplicably they often have Meridian.
All right, British brands, that's why.
Just ask about this one, because I've calibrated just a couple of Macintoshes before. One with Odyssey, for some reason, and another one had, I think it had Room Perfect, which was a Lingdor thing. This one's got Dirac.
It comes down to the varying changes in who's been providing the technology platform for it. Do bear in mind that a number of the thing you saw with Odyssey would have almost certainly been from the period of time when I think they were owned by the same people that had Denon and Marantz. And then they'll have just moved through different things. It's more stable now in the arrangement they have with Sonus Faber. So I suspect that Dirac is what you're going to see on their AV products going forward.
Uh-huh. Okay. Right. So that covers the home cinema news. Before we get into reviews, we're going to have to say goodbye to Jules very soon, because not only is he a professional calibrator of the highest standard, he also plays football. And he's going to go and play football in a little while. Is it training tonight? Is it okay?
It's training.
But before he goes, you were in Barcelona for ISE. So first of all, those who don't know what ISE is, what is it?
It's a massive event. I don't know how many people go to CES, Phil, but there were 58,000 people at Barcelona for ISE, Integrated Systems Europe.
Times that by three for CES.
Right, okay. So, you know, it wasn't so big. I thought it was big, but it's for AV and systems integration professionals. Things of interest this time around, there was almost nothing on the display side of things. LG displays where Sony were there. Samsung were there. There was nothing from the consumers. We didn't see any of the consumer panels, but what you got was professional displays. You got the Samsung wall, you got the Sony Cletus, you got the LG micro LED huge displays, also other things like, you know, OLED, transparent OLED signage and things like that. So a lot on that side, a lot on the networking side of things. And then more pertaining to what we're talking about this evening with home theater, a lot of audio companies there, and also related to what we're just talking about with Macintosh, they were there and they had a very impressive array of amps outside their room. I put a picture on my Facebook page. It was very, very interesting. And Dirac were there with their new acoustic live calibration tools. So that was an off-site demo. I did. First time to hear Palisson as well. And wow.
Yeah.
Those Palisson speakers.
Sounds like the same demo I got at CES.
Wow.
Yeah.
Could have been the same track. Ghost Riders, I think it was. It's now my Spotify thing, but, you know, it doesn't sound anything good as what they had.
Yeah, there's also one track called Batshit Crazy. I don't know if they played that one or not.
No, they didn't play that one.
No? No, that was interesting. Yeah. So did they do the A and B comparison?
They did, you know, on, off. Yeah. And the Palissons were awesome in two channel without that. I mean, without being on. When they switched it on, certainly the bass was really, you know, it was improved. It was nice and tight and really sort of punchy and sort of, you know, I was so impressed by that. And then we went to multi-channel, Top Gun and things like that. And it was still really good, but wasn't quite as impressed by what Dirac was doing to it. It's still a work in progress. So I expect them to be making improvements, and that's what I was told. And the other interesting thing got to do was the new Trinov demo as well. So they had a custom built room there. I think, you know, it was tens of thousands of pounds to build this room. And they had 16 subwoofers in this room. What they're doing is similar to what Dirac are doing, I believe. It's an active system. Whereby they basically creating a wall of sound. They're using the rear subwoofers to remove reflections and deal with room modes. And you're supposed to get, you know, identical bass in all the seating positions. I could only sit in one, so I can't vouch for what other people experienced. But it was really, really good. It wasn't the demo wasn't entirely perfect because there was still a lot of noise coming in from the showroom floor. But as a demonstration of principle, it was really good. So obviously this is going to be a big new thing, isn't it, for on the EQ side of things coming forward. And interesting that we just mentioned that Macintosh will be having Dirac in it as well. At the moment it's limited, I believe, to Storm Audio. But it'll be rolled out later.
Just a quick one. Dirac, did they allow you to move around in the seating
yes.
position?
Yes.
Because that really does make a big difference because the sweet spot is huge.
Yeah. It is. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Yes. So very impressed by both demos. And what else was there? You know, we hung around on the screen research booth because it's now PVA certified. They had a very interesting screen, an art screen, CinemaScope, and you could drop down in front of it. It had a piece of artwork. You can get whatever you want printed on there. So it would fit, you know, quite nicely into some living rooms because you can just have art printed on the front of it. So 1 minute it's art, next minute it goes up and it's a screen.
Which has been a concept that's been around a while. The AV Forum's home cinema that Stu has had Star Wars artwork over the front of it that moved out of the way. So it's nice to see that they're refining the technology and keeping it going.
Certainly Mad VR as well. They were on the same booth, so hung around with those guys for a while and watching them demoing that to a lot of integrators. Oops, I've lost my... What's happened? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can still hear you.
Oh, it's come back on again.
Yeah.
So I lost my mic for a second there. But it was a very interesting show and lots of manufacturer parties in the evening in Barcelona.
Yeah, well, the other thing I've just seen in your photographs there, I didn't see it. It's gone again. But DeLorean, what was the DeLorean there for? What was that?
I have no idea what it was there, apart from just to get people to a booth, hanging around the booth. I thought you'd be interested in that one.
I love a DeLorean. I couldn't afford one now. They're silly money nowadays. And of course,
back in the day, they were cheaper, weren't they?
Yeah, they were a lot cheaper.
You'd have to get a DeLorean to go back in time.
Oh, that's an idea.
So you can buy the cheaper DeLorean.
Maybe they can make a good one as well. Because, I mean, you know what I mean? It's like never meet your hero. I never want to drive one. Yeah. Anyway, excellent. ISE, it's a show I've never been to, Jules. And I think it's just because it's an integrator show and it's more, you know, custom install and so on. But that's sometimes where all the interest in technology starts to creep in because... You know, if you've got wealthy customers who want the best of the best, that's where you get your R&D budget. So, interesting to see that technology.
Phil, I would just say as well, ISE goes into other vertical markets as well. So it's there are exhibitors there in the education game and in business to business.
I think Cedia co-sponsor it, don't they? It's partly Cedia.
Yeah, because Cedia don't have a Euro show anymore, do they? They don't have they used to have a UK thing in London, but
that's right.
That disappeared a number of years ago. It's now just a US show. So okay, so that's obviously they're obviously attaching themselves to ISE then. Excellent. Mm-hmm. I may have to go one day and have a look. I've never been. And the thing is, it used to be in Amsterdam, didn't it? And
it did. You know, it outgrew Amsterdam.
Yeah.
Yeah. The only problem is there were reports of some pickpocketing and muggings going on.
It normally happens in Mobile World Congress. That normally happens in Barcelona. Anyway, so thank you very much for the report, Jules. That is appreciated. You need to go and do your football training.
I will be.
So thank you very much for your time tonight. We'll catch you on the next podcast, Jules. Good evening.
Okay, cheers, guys.
Bye-bye. Right, so let's move on to some reviews then. These reviews have been published, and the reason what we're talking about them is that, well, we had that annoying thing called Christmas and New Year get in the way before we had the magic of CES. But obviously that buried a lot of content because there was so much going on the homepage. Some of the reviews did get missed, so we're going to just remind you about some of the stuff that we have been looking at. And Ed did a big speaker package, and unusually for Ed, it was multi-channel. So, Ed, did you do this at home, or is this an on-site?
This was on-site and listed in the review very clearly as on-site, as we always do. I did this for a couple of different reasons. The first was I'd done two Christmas reviews of Big Stereo products, and I thought it was only fair, as we are AV forums, as we have got an off-site policy, that I could go and do something that was actually multi-channel. And as people have noticed, a bit of a cost of living crisis. So the other review I did in 2022 for multi-channel, actually I did two. I did an ELAC one, but I also did the Bowers & Wilkins 800 series. So I asked the question, could you get close to the experience I had with the Bowers & Wilkins 800 series? Now, Phil's heard that room, and I need to be clear that the room that I listened to these in was nowhere near as treated and set. But could I approach that fundamental quality for less money? And went off and listened to some Paradigm Founders. Now, this is a bit of a weird one, because we've actually done a different Paradigm Founder review in the past, but we dug different speakers out for this one. And I was seriously impressed. I don't want to describe a system that costs as much as this one did as a bargain, because that's both insulting and fatuous. But these are exceptional speakers, even judged at their asking price. There's a lot of speaker there. There's a lot of clever technology there. So effectively, the major story is that these large founders use an active bass module. And it just lends a speaker that's significantly smaller than the Bowers & Wilkins 801, that same utterly imperious just shove. And it was a tremendous listening experience. It really was. And it came in total, the system that I listened to, for less than a price of the 801 fronts that the Bowers & Wilkins system had. Now, I need to be clear, it wasn't as good. But it was a seriously, seriously impressive experience. And something else that is worth bearing in mind, if you are looking at doing conventional box loudspeakers in certain roles and then mixing in walls and in ceilings, in Paradigm's a North American company, they're very, very good at this sort of thing. So there are products commensurate with the quality of the founders at available for in wall and in ceiling applications. They all come into the UK. I would say that there's not a lot I can think of at the money that these speakers are going for, even after a recent price rise, that combine the obsessive attention to detail with some really clever material choices and the fact they're built like lorries. I mean, they are. I wouldn't want to lift them up and down stairs, but you know, I dare say that you could probably
of the reasons why it was an on-site.
Oh, no, absolutely. I mean, my house, the house I live in now is simply not up to the task of testing any multi-channel, let alone something this size. I was genuinely, genuinely impressed. I'm aware that the number of people shopping for systems at this sort of level isn't huge. But if you are looking for your end game AV system, I was truly staggered at how close they got to the best AV experience I've had in some time, and down in Bowers & Wilkins' own room. How close these got in a much more ad hoc setup at substantially less money. I don't think
that's
they're the most beautiful. I don't think they're the most beautiful speakers going, and you know, that may or may not matter to you. But nevertheless, I was genuinely impressed. And Paradigm's pedigree in this field is impeccable. Mm. So they know what they're doing. And if you don't want to go full fat, the size of the system that I listen to, if you look on the site, you will find additionally a review of the smaller Founder LCR based system. Yeah. And that will, you know, you can mix and match to your heart's content with in wall and in ceiling options. I do feel it was a decent Christmas review, because it was something of a stocking surprise.
Yep. You know, that's high praise, putting them up against that. Mm. You get very close for a lot less money. Yeah. But still serious dosh though, Ed, wasn't it, with the system you tested?
Yeah, it was. It came in, I believe, in the region of 20K. And obviously, the company that brings in Paradigm also brings in the Anthem stuff, and they don't give that away either. Mm-hmm. But, you know, this is where the serious business in AV is being done these days. I mean, affordable AV is something of a fringe interest these days. We have to be honest about this. This is where the business is, and this is a serious contender that if you are looking for an in-game AV system, you do need to check these ones out.
Yeah, excellent. Right, so going from one end of the market to the other, very swiftly here. And again, these reviews are up on the site. They have been for a while. Get yourself along and read them if you are interested in these. Like I say, they did kind of get buried round about the Christmas period. But Martin, you had a look at SVS's new Prime Wireless Pro speakers.
Yes, that's right.
Tell us a little bit about them, price point, and what they're aimed at.
So £1,000, £999. If you were to buy them stateside, you'd pick them up for about £735 at current exchange rate. That's not atypical, but I think that's been exacerbated as well, post-world events. But I have to say, I loved this pair of speakers. They're powered rather than active. So actually only the right speaker is the one that does all the work in terms of amplification and crossover. So the link is via interconnect to the left speaker. But I thought in terms of performance, they were fantastic for the price point. Excellent bass extension, but not just great bass extension, but controlled bass extension and a facility to crank them up loud as well. So they're great party companions if that's what you would choose to do with them. I accept that various people on the forums have suggested that perhaps they're not the prettiest speakers in the world. And I do concede that. But they are very well built and they're chunky and they've got a lovely black lacquer finish. And I have to say, either side of my TV, they looked really fantastic. And that's why I gave them the thumbs up for looks. I know a lot of the American manufacturers don't necessarily specialize in aesthetics, but I thought they looked very complimentary of my flat panel display. Unfortunately, I couldn't get DTS PlayFi to work. But I understand I'm not the only person that.
Has anybody managed to get it to work?
On one or two occasions it has functioned for me. But yeah, DTS either needs to pull a finger out of somewhere or exit gracefully. There are issues that fixes have been promised for some time, and they are still not forthcoming, and there are a number of manufacturers who are increasingly furious. Something has to happen. Martin, your experiences are largely in keeping with quite a few people.
Thank you.
Okay, well, like I say, these reviews are up on the site, so go have a look if they are of interest to you. But we need to move things on. Yeah, because like I say, we're trying to hit the 90-minute mark on the new podcast format. So we've done TV, we've done home cinema. Coming up next is Ed and the Hi-Fi section.
If you enjoy the podcast on YouTube, then please like and subscribe. If you're listening to the audio version, then please leave us a rating on your podcast app. We invite you to email questions and feedback to podcast@avforums.com and join in with this episode's discussion thread in the podcasts forum at AV Forums.
Right then. Okay. Phil is going silent for a bit, and it's going to be me saying for a period of time as we do the hi-fi section. We've got some news to kick off with. The starting point for this is a new KEF range R-Series. The big story is something that we have seen before. The meta material absorbent technology. It's quite baffling stuff. I've had some demonstrations of it. It defies easy description. When you look at sort of how KEF's employed it, it looks more than anything else like the labyrinth meme in the early Westworld episodes. Nevertheless, what it's designed to do is prevent unwanted information coming back through the driver and muddying the sound. And we've tested the LS50s in their passive and active variants, which were the debut point for this technology. And it works exceptionally well. Now, the R-Series is different to the LS50 insofar as all of the speakers are passive. There's more than one of them. There are, in fact, three floor standers, one stand mount and center speaker options. And most importantly for you home cinema fans as well, KEF is continuing with their upward firing Atmos and other format materials, which can be added to the top of any of the speakers themselves. The other interesting one, and I think we're going to see more of this, is When they're launching at this point, they're in relatively standard finishes, but there's going to be some extra designer finishes. And I think this is the next thing that we're going to start seeing a bit more of. I think we're going to probably reach peak retro. There's still going to be more retro products, but I think we've probably peaked in that. And I think we're going to see much more in the way of bespoke finishes and unique colorings and generally just making your products stand out from other people's equipment. And I think...
Are these going to be available at Bristol for people to have a look at? Do you know?
I believe at least some of them are going, yes. And you know, the R series has traditionally been a very decent seller for KEF. It's a big part of what they do. You get a lot of the flavour of the reference technology, the reference range speakers from them. They're generally speaking quite aesthetically pleasing. So yeah, I mean, this is a decent and important update. And I have voiced an interest for review samples. I'm not going to lie, I haven't had a huge amount of success with KEF review samples in the last year. But if you are in some way affiliated with KEF and you're listening to this, then, you know, do make yourself known, and I'd be delighted to do a test run on these. And I'm sure that the multi-channel boys would be delighted to have a look at the upward firers and other bits and bobs as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
The other one is, in terms of news stories that I picked out, is Cambridge Audio has launched two affordable streamers. And often we use the word affordable with products that aren't affordable. These actually genuinely are. There's two of them. And I've managed to studiously forget their names because I'm afraid they're not terribly memorable. Where are they gone? There's
AXN
one.
AXN10 and the MXN10.
Thank you, Ian. One is £449 and small, and one is £549 and big. And their specifications are extremely similar. But there's something that's worth pointing out here. Blue Sound has had this part of the market pretty much wrapped up for a fairly long period of time, because when you buy a Blue Sound node, it looks fine. And it's supported by an excellent operating system. Now, I'm going to stick my neck out. I don't think that Stream Magic, I haven't tried this latest iteration yet, so I may be doing them a disservice. I don't think it's quite as flexible as BlueOS. And it doesn't, obviously, now BlueOS is being used by Roxanne and other companies. There's an ability to build a whole house of components using the software from different companies. Nevertheless, Stream Magic is stable, easy to use, and good. So I would say that if you are looking to get streaming up and running on a system for, you know, relatively sensible money, this is a really, really good place to start looking. And I have also requested review samples of these, because I think these could be Dark Horse products. And, you know, it's good to see Cambridge Audio. God, it's about 15 years since they launched the original MP30. We won't talk about streaming product they made before that, because it was a dark time in everyone's past. The MP30 was the first time they went into network audio, and it's really good to see them still tweaking, cajoling, and updating these products to reflect the requirements. And I've requested review samples. I have a sneaking suspicion that they are going to be very, very good. So with that being me talking, this is an instance where Phil, being on the ground, has seen something which is I just glossed over and thought, well, that doesn't sound very interesting at all. But as well as televisions at the Philips press launch, there were updated headphones and earphones. Now, two of them I flagged because they are updates to products that we've already tested. There's the Fidelio L4, which replaces the imaginatively titled L3. That's a very, very good headphone. Notable as the first time I tested a wireless headphone that sounded better with the noise cancelling engaged than with it disengaged, something which has now started to appear in the competition as well. I didn't think there was much wrong with the L3, so I'm going to be interested to see what's been done. I mean, they say it's lighter. They've been, you know, tweaking bits here and there.
Yeah, it is, and it, some of the design aspects that it's well known on these on the L3 appears in the L4, but shrunk down. They're a bit more focused is probably the word I would use. You know, they've taken the best of L3 and looked at what they're going to do with L4. Nice use of materials, as you would expect, Muir head leather. And they've thought about the design as well. So the headband's been redesigned, repurposed. The leather around there's slightly thicker, slightly more comfortable. And then they've upped the game, obviously, with technology on boards. It's got Bluetooth 5.3 and so on. So, yeah, it looks like a really nice headphone, to be honest.
And then the earphone has also been updated. So that's now the T2 earbud. And this, the thing that Philips has done that leaps off the page and should have everyone rejoicing, the T1 was excellent. It is excellent. I still use them from time to time. But it's an absolute whopper. It's one of the largest true wireless earphones I've ever seen in my life. It's like sticking a Brussels sprout into each ear.
When you see them next to each other, Ed, so I had the opportunity, there was one of the workshops was the design workshop, and obviously talking about how they've designed the product. And when you see the two of them sat next to the T1 to the T2, you wouldn't think it was the same family line ahead. The T1 is massive in comparison.
I
know.
I mean, it's a cracking product, but it was a bit of a... This, if they've corrected the major thing, the major thing that stood out as being a bit iffy about the T1, then this could be an absolutely sensational bit of kit. And I will request a review sample. I mean, because it feeds into everything. Obviously, the T1 is a big lad, which means it's got a big case as well. You know, you need to have a significant pocket to accommodate the T1 case. So if this case has shrunk down, and they say they've done all this whilst increasing battery life. So all signs point to this being one to watch. I'm more interested in reviewing this one than I am the L4.
The ceramic material as well that they're now using there obviously helps with the Bluetooth connectivity and so on, but it just makes it feel like such a nice product as well. They've really thought about it,
I mean, I'm really impressed. Philips has been on a bit of a run for headphones now for getting on 5-6 years. So, I mean, it's good to see that they're at it. And then the last product, and we have our running order that we consult before these things kick off. I just decided to dispense with this, but it is tremendously interesting. And Phil is going to tell us more about it because he actually saw it.
So, I wasn't expecting a product like this, but obviously sitting through the press conference, this popped up. So it's a collaboration between Philips TP Vision and sleep scientists called Cocoon. And what they do is they monitor your sleep and how well you're sleeping and your sleep patterns and your heart rate and all that kind of thing, and try and give you some suggestions as to how to improve your sleep. Because if there's one, you know, pick me up that everybody could benefit from is a better night's sleep. And if you've got a good night's sleep, it's, you know, some of them are saying it's better than taking class A drugs, because, you know, if you're properly rested, you're probably ready for your day ahead. So they have this headphone. It's the 7808 or the 7808, and it's called sleep headphones. Now, you would look at this and think, my God, what is that? Because it looks very, very strange. But basically, there is a section of this, and this is the first generation. You know, this will advance, but it's brand new technology. So there is a bit that fits behind your head, which is the long piece in the middle, if you're looking at the photograph. If you don't have a photograph, there's like a large area in the middle, and then the actual wires to the headphones are actually fixed in a certain way, so they don't pull the headphone out of your ear when you're sleeping, because we've all worn headphones to bed at some point and had to take them off, because if you turn on your side, and I'm a side sleeper, you can really notice that the earbud is in your ear, or you've got a cup over your ear or whatever. So these are designed to not be an issue when you're wearing them if you're a side sleeper or whatever. And it's designed basically to monitor your sleep. So what it does is it knows what stage of sleep that you're at. And if you start to drift off into deep sleep, it then starts to fade your music out and brings in white noise, but not just white noise, but also noise reduction. So if your partner is quite noisy, a bit of a snorer, it will actually help you stay asleep, because the noise cancellation tunes itself to that noise and will remove that noise, or certainly dim it down to a level where it will not affect you or affect your sleep, so you get a much better night's sleep. Now, I don't know if you other guys have got these, you know, I've got an Apple Watch or a Fitbit or a Garmin or whatever. You can do a lot to monitor your sleep, looking at these things like your heart rate and oxygen levels and, you know, how many times you woke up during the night and so on. But that's only one side of the story. So what they're trying to do with these headphones is give you that better night's sleep. You know, you can tell when you've had a bad night's sleep. You can look at your watch, you can look at your apps and see why you've had a bad night's sleep. But what's the solution? Well, Cocoon reckon it's this technology. And I've got to say, I think all of us here are probably people who, you know, from time to time have a bad night's sleep or have a noisy partner or have disturbed sleep at some point.
On a more basic level, I am the noisy partner. So this
I'm the noisy partner as well. I will admit to that. Yeah, Ed, you're right there. But you know, anything that helps get a better night's sleep is something that I'm definitely going to be looking at. So I think these are quite reasonably priced as well. I mean, some of the competition, I believe, are multiple hundreds in costs. I think these come in at about 180 euros, I think was the price it was being bandied around. So, you know, it's not an insignificant amount of money, but if they actually do what they say on the tin and can do that over the 10-hour battery life and help you sleep and help you stay asleep, then I think it's a really interesting product. And it just jumped out at me. You know, you can talk about, you know, great sound quality and all the rest of it, but if you're tired and irritable and so on, you're not much fun to anybody around you.
No, absolutely.
So if it helps you get a better night's sleep, I'm all for it.
And this is actually, I have to say, this is classic Philips. This is this is the same thinking bit that you have behind Ambilight and so many other things that they've done, where it's taking what everyone else is doing and going, well, what could we do differently? And long may this continue. So yeah, I would be delighted to get a sample in for this.
Anybody else on the team interested in these, Mark? Is it something that would help you?
Yeah, because I find as I get older, I don't sleep as well anyway. So yes, I would say it could possibly be. I'm very interested in this product, actually. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and Ian, can you play Sleep Simulator with these, huh?
I'm sure there is a sleep simulator. But no, I'm more than happy to be a willing volunteer if you want to pay me to sleep for an afternoon. I've got no problem with that. At all.
So, spoken like a true journalist, I salute.
Well, actually, I think this would be the first time that we would pay for you to sleep on the job, actually, to test these things. So there you go. But yeah, it was a really interesting product, Ed. Really interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. And as I say, we'll try and get them in and we'll see what they do. Right, moving on, we'll do this super quickly. The review is up on the site and I don't want to go at length into it. We were really, really lucky. We got the UK review sample of the NAD 3050LE, NAD's birthday present to itself. So they've been going since 1972, the year the A-team were sent to prison. They've built an amplifier that looks like it comes from 1972. And on the inside is absolutely prime 2023. So on the front, you get VU meters. On the back, you get Dirac streaming. Not Dirac. So you do get Dirac setup. You get BlueOS streaming and HDMI ARC. And I love this product. It's not perfect. I did find that its wireless reception was iffy. It didn't feel as powerful as I thought it was going to be. It did feel a little bit less grunty than I was expecting because I've tested plenty of NAD products and they've had lots and lots of power. But I can forgive it almost all of that. It's just such a perfect balance of entertainment in terms of how it looks and feels with asking nothing of you. In terms of how it operates in a modern sense. So I was genuinely impressed. The review is up on the site. The caveat, and we say this in the review, as far as I know, all of these LE models are sold. We took the decision to review it because we think it's an interesting product. We think it's notable. But these limited edition ones, they made 1,972 plus an unknown number of unserialed ones. The review sample is one of those. But there aren't many of them. They're almost all spoken for, certainly at a dealer level and mostly at a customer level too. However, it does appear that something that looks and behaves quite like this is going to enter more serial production. And if that's the case, I will most likely update the review to note the differences and you can check the relevant sections of it. The other thing that's worth noting is if you like the idea of this, but you're not completely sold on the NAD, later on this month is a review of yet another amplifier that has both VU meters, streaming, and HDMI ARC, and that is not a limited edition. And whilst they're very similar on the outside, I was genuinely surprised at how differently I perceived them in their terms of their operation, how they look, and how they feel. So watch this space, and I do stand by what I said when I was talking about the KEFs. These are perhaps the high point of retro, and we might be gently strolling away from that, which may or may not be a topic for another podcast, because I know that some people who comment on these review threads are sick to the back teeth of it. So I would look forward to what you'd actually like hi-fi companies to be doing, and we can discuss that at another time.
Ed, how accurate are the VUs?
On the NAD, not at all.
Right.
Can we be honest on this? If the gold standard for VU meter accuracy is Macintosh and AccuPhase, the product that I've got here that has also gone through under the same at the same time, that's got pretty decent ones. The NAD ones are largely decorative, and if you select the peak input, they just essentially go max and just sit there redlined at the end of the input display. But no. It's fun, it's theatre, and if you don't like them, you can turn them off. So that's all fair enough. And if you are looking for something a little bit less archaic, hang on a second, I've missed something. Before I hand over to Martin, apologies, Martin, just very quickly, not this Friday, but next Friday is Bristol 2023. We have been without Bristol for a couple of years. The last one was 2020. Many people would be delighted that we've been without Bristol for a couple of years, but we have. It's back. I'm going. It's now a hi-fi show, so if you are going in expectation of AV, don't, because there will be slim to none.
Yeah.
But the same unique aesthetics of the Marriott Hotel will be there. It looks like an excellent turnout of hi-fi manufacturers. I'll be going. I'll be generating a show report. If you do see me blundering around, make yourselves known.
Yeah, there'll be you. If you see Ed, go.
No, not until we've finished. But yeah, okay, see how we go from there. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I mean, I did 17 consecutive ones from 2003 to 2020. So it's time to kick that back into life and see where we go from there. But if you are looking to, you know, to get most major hi-fi brand stuff in one place, in one visit, it's still worth the trip. So I would say that that's well worth a look. See how it goes. And I hope to see some of you there. And now returning to not just the Ed show. So Martin, you've been looking at the System Air, or is it System Audio? SA Air 9 wireless speakers.
Yeah, that's right. System Audio, hence the SA.
Yeah.
Again, a set of powered speakers. In this case, I think the left one was the one doing the work. And again, connected by internet. And therefore not by Cat5 or wirelessly. I have to say, I did love these speakers. Beautifully formed. We got the walnut version from Karma AV, and they sound lovely. Particularly, they really shone on classical music and sources, actually, and had great prowess with vocals. And I was very impressed with them. What I found a little unfortunate is that at higher levels, the bass tended to lose control and the sound field could muddy up a bit. But they are beautiful sounding speakers, and enjoyed my time with them. And I think if I had a choice between these, and it's interesting that they are similarly priced to the SVS Wireless Pro pair, I think I would settle for these. They do have HDMI ARC, not much else in the way of connectivity. So Bluetooth and a couple of Toslink connections as well. But I think they're a rather fascinating company, actually. And I think their CEO and founder, Olli Witthoft, who says, you know, consumers shouldn't get blinded by the science when they're making choices in audio. They should go for what they like, and they should listen to what people are saying about the way it sounds rather than the science and the figures. So I enjoyed this pair very much, and I hope we hear more from System Audio, because I have to say, in my naivety of the two-channel world, I was not familiar with that brand at all.
No, they've made some good stuff, and I'm sure that somewhere there's a 15,000-word thesis to be had as to why the American speaker has a dominant right and the European speaker has a dominant left.
So, yeah. You know,
we can enjoy that one at another time. No, I've had some experience with the passive speakers. It's just... it's not showy engineering, but it's generally speaking effective engineering, and I've always enjoyed the results. So yeah, I mean that mirrors my thoughts on that. All that is left for me to do in hi-fi is to do album, vinyl, and playlist of the podcast. Now, I went to an electronic gig at the weekend. I've been deep in electronic music for the last 2 weeks, so I'm afraid if you don't like electronic music, tough on this one. The album of the week is an American artist called Amtrak. He's released his second full-length album called Extra Time, and you can buy it on the Bandcamp service, which is an excellent way of actually ensuring that the artist gets some money. It's all on the major streaming services as well, but if you do want to buy it, you know, do that. Cross his palm with silver. You can buy it on, there will be a limited edition vinyl run. Now, it's going to come from the US and it's going to cost a fortune. All I would say is that there is one copy of his previous album for sale on vinyl on Discogs in the entire world, and it's £170. So if you view vinyl as an investment as opposed to something you actually play, you might want to buy it on vinyl and just screw it away and not play it for 2 years and see where it goes. I think that's breathtakingly cynical, but you do you. Vinyl, this is another album. This is a Belgian, well, a crypto Belgian band called Acid Arab. And if you wanted a sort of two-word description as to how this album sounds, that's pretty close. This is their third album, imaginatively titled Trois, Three. One of my friends did point out that he feels that this sounds like the music in an ISIS training video. And I think that's harsh, but you know, your mileage may vary. It is an electronic album that borrows themes from throughout the Middle East. It's an acquired taste, but I think it's one of the most imaginative and out and out grunty electronic albums I've listened to in a very long time. I think it's very, very, very much worth listening to. And it is available on vinyl. My copy has been ordered. I'm sure people will be delighted who live in the vicinity of me for that, but I think it's well worth a listen. It's on all the major streaming services again, and it's something just a little bit different. And finally, playlist. I'm using Spotify more these days, and one brilliantly titled Laser Disco appeared in my You May Like, and do you know what I did like? It combines things that are very crypto 1970s with things that are absolutely of the moment, and it flows through. It's a good listen. It doesn't necessarily overstay its welcome at 3 hours 45. Good for a long drive. Try not to go too fast. If you don't like one of the tracks on it, the chances are the next one will be up your alley, provided that you are in some way, shape or form an electronic music fan. Don't worry, the next podcast will contain real instruments. So there.
Okay, well, thank you very much for that, Ed. That's a hi-fi section done and dusted. In fact, that's a podcast done and dusted for another week. So my thanks to Ed, Ian and Martin.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
And of course, thanks to Jules, who had to leave us to go to his football training. The next podcast is the Movies Edition. It's on next Monday the 20th. They start at 8:30. So if you want to watch live, it's 8:30 for that. And of course, it will be available as soon as the live stream has finished as an audio only. And this podcast, the main AV Forums podcast where we cover hardware, will return in 2 weeks' time. That's the 27th of February. Don't forget, we will have Danny Tack from Philips on that podcast. If you have any questions for Danny, then please get them in by Wednesday the 15th via the email, which is podcast@avforums.com, or leave it in this thread for this podcast, and we'll try and ask as many of those as possible. If you've enjoyed this podcast, then of course you can leave us a like, you can subscribe, and you can do all the things that you would normally do. And of course, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, bookmark AV Forums, you know, all the usual social stuff. You know what to do with those. It'd be great if you gave us a follow on all of those. And of course, if you listen to us on a podcast provider, if they allow you to leave a rating, then please do consider that. And I think that's about it. So I'm Phil Hinton. Thank you very much for watching and listening. And please give us your feedback on this new podcast format. What do you think? We'll catch you for the next one. Good night.